This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. These days, we seem to confront shocking new headlines almost every day, so it's hard to know what tomorrow will bring. And that makes Michael Walden's new book all the more remarkable. The NC State economist wanted to know what North Carolina would look like by the year 2050. He examined the trends and offered plausible outcomes for our state over the next few decades. Among them, better connected urban areas that could become regional hubs for economic activity. How does Charlanta sound? And technical innovations that could stop the flow of people and wealth from rural areas. His new book is called North Carolina Beyond the Connected Age, The Tar Heel State in 2050. Michael Walden, welcome back to the State of Things.
Thanks, Frank. I appreciate it.
Obviously, you are wise enough not to play Nostradamus in the 21st century. Tell us what you're trying to turn to do with this book.
I guess at the core, I'm trying to give decision makers, both in the private and public sector, information so they won't be surprised. We face some daunting challenges in the future. I think we also face some incredible opportunities. You tease that I think there's going to be a great deal of change and flux and churning in the job market. I think that's one of the key takeaways of my book. We're going to have more people, maybe 3.5 more people, a million more people. I get my numbers right. Million more people by 2050. That means we got to provide them with electricity, power, water, resources. So there are some challenges there. And then you mentioned the fact that we are trending toward becoming an even more urbanized state. That's all actually taken place in the last four decades. When I came to NC State in 78, we were a rural state. We're now an urban state, and that's going to become, I think, even more dominant, which presents issues and challenges for about a third of our counties, which I'm projecting will actually depopulate fewer people. So, I think if I can provide some plausible forecast and some discussion about the future, private decision makers, public decision makers can look at that and perhaps get a head start on addressing some of the issues.
Well, let's glimpse some of the snapshots looking at the trajectory and talk about that urbanization and how you see sort of more connectivity creating these regional hubs.
Yeah, that's been if you look at North Carolina in the last couple of decades, it's been incredible. You go to any urban area in North Carolina, Durham, Raleigh, Triad, Charlotte, even Asheville and Wilmington, the cranes are up, flooded with young people. That's where the universities are. That's where a lot of the energy is. The new industries have flocked to those areas, and futurists think that will continue. So I think that's going to present some opportunities, for example, for you, as you said, increased connectivity. Some talk about this mega region, as you mentioned, between Raleigh down to Charlotte and over to Atlanta and Birmingham. I think that'll make mass transit more feasible, but there will be some downsides, more congestion, higher land prices, higher housing prices, potentially more pollution. And I think the obvious concern is, well, what about the rural counties that aren't going to grow? How do we continue to provide services there? How do we continue to provide education there if they have fewer people, a smaller tax base? So, again, this is an example, I think, of if I can provide information that, for example, some folks sitting in our General Assembly look at this and say, if this guy's right, we need to start thinking about this now rather than wait until some of the challenges are right at our doorstep.
But one of the ways is, of course, the challenge is to figure out what to do about it. Do you want to check the flow from those rural areas? If not, what do you do about who's left behind,
and
all of those questions. But also, before we get to some of those deeper challenges, you've also identified a countervailing trend that might just check or slow the exodus from rural areas. Tell us about that.
Yeah, one of the things I try to do in the book is present what I call the smart money trend, that is what most people think will occur, but also then provide readers with an alternative. And in this case, about where people live, the alternative is that maybe there'll be an end to the big migration to urban areas because of technology, for example, virtualization, which, as I remember last Christmas, someone was selling these miniature virtualization techniques, which essentially allow you to be in one place but actually project yourself to another and have all the sensory perceptions that you would from being actually there. Well, if that is perfected, people could still live and work in rural areas, yet get the advantages of being in the big city. So if we had that combined with things like drone delivery, that might open up rural areas to actually turn this tide and grow. So I wouldn't bet on that, but I think that's certainly a possibility. But I think the more likely scenario is we're going to have some challenges in rural counties. How do we bring jobs there again, and how we bring public services there if we have a smaller tax base?
What about population increase? You take a look at the trend in North Carolina, the fact that we are we've experienced net increases in our population. Is that generally a good thing? And what do we have to think about as our population grows?
Oh, I certainly understand people who say, you know, we're big enough. We got enough people here. I don't really want growth. And I understand that. I actually have a section there talking about that. What's really, Frank, moving our population in North Carolina has been not that we're producing more children per family. It's that people are moving here from other states. North Carolina, for the last several decades, has been among the top states in what economists call in-migration, people moving here from other states. And that's really going to drive our growth in the future. Now, this is another one of those, well, maybe not, situations. What if, for example, global warming is real and continues and we become a hotter state that has hotter summers, more milder winters? And the same thing happens all over the country. And what's driving a lot of the folks, my perception is, and data indicate, who are moving to North Carolina from, say, the New England states, from the Midwest states, is they don't want to endure those bad winters. What if bad winters are not a problem in the future? Well, that might stop that in-migration to North Carolina and other southern states, and we could have a much smaller population. So, again, this is where trends and issues in different sectors of our economy can come together.
Not to mention the fact that some of that in-migration has come from southern states that have gotten too hot already.
That's right.
So people who have thought they were going to retire in Florida have now kind of moved halfway back.
Yeah.
So all of that, these kind of, as you say, countervailing forces. And then that leads to the question of energy and sort of how we're going to provide energy and transportation for all of these folks. And there you have both kind of the optimistic view and the pessimistic view of how we can move forward.
And I think this is where economic principles can be helpful. In the energy area, of course, there's been a big push to move us away from things like coal and oil and to renewables. And I do think that renewables will increase. And I have a chart in the book that compares where we might get our energy in the future in North Carolina in 2050 compared to today. And the projections are we'll be using more natural gas, we'll be using more renewables, but we'll be using less nuclear and less oil, et cetera. If we want to speed that along, and if we are worried about, for example, global warming, and I don't take a stand on whether that's occurring or not, that's not my field, but if it is occurring, then one thing we can do is use the principle of a negative externality. I don't want to get in the weeds on this, but that simply says if we, in our normal day-to-day occurrences and buying, create some negatives in our economy like pollution, one way to address that internally without the government using its heavy hand to say, all right, for every mile you drive using an internal combustion engine, we're going to put a little pollution tax on that. And that would deter us perhaps from using that mode of energy and actually encourage us or speed along us going to those renewables. So that's one thing that we could do. In the water area, if we're going to add 3.5 million more people between now and 2050, we're not going to build any more reservoirs in North Carolina. It's too expensive. There are environmental issues. This is where, again, I think right pricing can occur if you do what's called leveled pricing, where the more water you use, the higher the rate that you pay. Raleigh's already doing that. They've seen their per capita consumption go down. And then also, we, I think, increasingly are going to have the ability, and some people are going, ooh, when they hear this, to recycle water within our own housing units rather than it being flushed down, going into a sewer, going down the river, down the Neuse River, and Fayetteville has to clean it up. We'll do that internally in our household. That could cut back dramatically on water use.
Well, let's get back to some of these externalities, too, because you talked about maybe taxing individuals on the amount of number of drives, miles they drive. Maybe you could even assess the efficiency of their engine and however you want to do it. But also for businesses that pollute. I mean, obviously, they're costing us all. Pollution costs us, and it's a very easy thing to calculate. The calculations are all out there. And so if that's one of your costs, one of the ideas floated about is that we make them pay it, and don't socialize the cost. But in fact, if you're the one who created this thing that has cut into productivity, pay for it.
Oh, and that's been an idea that's been around for decades. In fact, recently, a collection of secretaries of state, U.S. secretaries of state, Jim Baker, George Shultz, and some others, published a research paper that, in essence, advocated this. And this is something, well, North Carolina could do it on its own, but that really needs to be a national situation. But simply says, if you are doing something as an individual or an individual business that imposes costs for others, in this case, pollution, which has some obviously negative effects on the environment, on individuals, to get people to deter from that, you simply say, all right, you're emitting this amount of pollution per mile. We're going to put this little tax on you that you'll pay maybe at the pump. And then we use that money to clean up the pollution, but it also deters you from perhaps driving as much.
Now, those are pure market mechanisms. Mm-hmm. In other words, pay as you go. If that's your cost, pay your cost. That's what any good capitalist system, if all the markets functioned efficiently, would be doing. We're not doing it here. That part seems to be malfunctioning. Then there's the question of government investment, kind of playing favorites. And you talked earlier about the fact that we have been moving away from using coal and fossil fuels. But from a policy standpoint, we've actually retrenched a bit. And there have been policies in this legislature that have encouraged fossil fuel and discouraged investment in renewables. Is that something we should do? Should we wait until the market says, okay, the price is right, let's get off of fossils and onto renewables? How do we play that game?
Well, I think that's very an important question. It's a hard question to answer. I think we'd rather have those fuel alternatives stand on their own two feet. And fortunately, if you look at the trends for like solar power is becoming more and more feasible. Where it won't need subsidies, and I think that trend is going to continue. So, for example, in the book, I have a table that, as I indicated earlier, projects where we're going to get our fuel, shows actually a doubling of the share of electricity being generated from renewables in 2050 compared to today. And that's all based on projections that solar is going to become more efficient. So I think that's my preferred approach. I might indicate that there's actually been a new controversy. I think in the footnotes talk about it in the book about in the agricultural area about concerns about what solar panels do to the quality of the soil. And if, for example, those solar panels were removed, what would they have had some negative impact on the soil? So I think we're going to have a continuing debate about this, but I do think renewables will increase their share of energy production.
Let's talk about incentives and bringing in business. As you say, urbanization, and that means that particularly in the tech sector, higher paying jobs, the kind of jobs we want to encourage. I mean, let's use the Amazon HQ2 as an example. How far should localities go and states go in providing incentives for these businesses to locate?
It's not going to end tomorrow, and I suspect, and North Carolina has already indicated, there have been several areas in North Carolina that made bids for Amazons, and I think North Carolina, the state, has already indicated they'll be supportive of that with incentives. We have to be careful because the world is changing rapidly, particularly the tech world. Every day you pick up a newspaper and you see, one tech company has expanded, but another tech company maybe have contracted. And although Amazon is riding high now and people talk about Amazon being the seller of everything down the road, I can remember it wasn't too long ago, maybe a decade, people said the same about Walmart. And their share of the market has shrunk. So I think we do need to be careful, and government needs to realize that, the ground may look very, very inviting to Amazon right now, but where's Amazon going to be 20 years from now? Will some other tech company and some other tech processes put them aside, and in which case we're holding the bag with incentives. But the good thing about incentives for North Carolina, there was a recent report from WRAL that confirmed this, is that we have been very careful in saying, all right, we're going to provide you with these incentives as long as you produce the number of jobs that you're telling us. If you don't produce those number of jobs, the incentives will be less.
Well, and do these incentives also take into account the cost that you're going to impose? If I'm going to need more public transportation or transportation, or you're going to create more pollution, et cetera, or higher land costs, which could displace families and cause more homelessness, all those costs.
Oh, yeah. And in fact, there was a – I mentioned this in some of the interviews I've recently done about Amazon. Clearly, if Amazon were to come to North Carolina, whether it's Charlotte or Raleigh, or I think the Triad put in a bid. I think Hickory might have put in a bid, too. And you bring 50,000 jobs in, that's not going to be overnight, but it's going to be over several decades. That's likely going to increase the value of land around those metro areas. It's going to increase the cost of housing. It's presumably going to cause more traffic. Now, of course, Amazon says they want a mass transit system. And maybe, for example, if they came to Raleigh, Raleigh could work with them on designing that. But, yeah, there would definitely be some negatives that we want to take into account. And the incentive packages, in my opinion, generally don't account for those. They're looking at the plus sides in terms of jobs created, economic output. And even though you might give the company an incentive that is a reduction of taxes they would have paid, you're going to pick up tax revenue in other forms in terms of the employees and the supply chain, et cetera.
We are talking about the future of North Carolina and what it might look like in the year 2050. That conversation right here on The State of Things. Talking with Michael Walden, an economics professor at NC State, whose new book is North Carolina Beyond the Connected Age, the Tar Heel State in 2050. You also talk about just taking a look at our tax code as economic realities change. It's, you know, we need to really look at how our tax code is structured.
We do. And I talk about, I think, the need to move to a more general, flexible tax code. The example I give in the book is what would happen if, for example, the manufacturing sector, which we still have a very important manufacturing sector in North Carolina, and manufactured products are one of those types of products where we levy a sales tax. What if that was to change in a way that some say it will, where if the Waldens needed a new refrigerator, we don't go to a retailer and buy that, and then that price is taxed. We actually go down to our 3D printing room in our home, and we print it and make it, manufacture it in-house. What's that going to do to retail sales? So, and some may look at that and say, Walden, that's just so far-fetched. Well, maybe not. I talk about moving to two possible alternative tax systems in the state, one based on income, one based on consumption. I lay out some specific plans of how we could use those tax systems to support families, support low-income people also. But I do think we want to move more towards simplification with the idea that how people earn income, who earns income, could be dramatically different in 2050 than it is today.
Also, when we talk about rising population, you say that perhaps the state should be strategic about who it invites, not necessarily invites, but who it attracts to this state.
I think there is a general notion that if we attract individuals who are bringing skills, particularly skills that are needed by industry, that's a big plus for the state. I certainly am not one who says we need to restrict the attraction of individuals to those folks. But I do think that states as well as the nation is looking more now at the skill base of people moving in rather than some other criteria.
You took a look at some very real trends in North Carolina and threaded them out and talked about the policy implications. But let's take the very large picture of what artificial intelligence might do to consumption and production in general, the very real possibility that we just don't need many more workers. What would we do then?
Well, that I think is probably the biggest. If you ask me what's the most important chapter in the book, I'd say the one on jobs, because jobs affect everyone. People understand jobs. And many economists think we are on the cusp of massive changes in the job market. Just 2 days ago, MIT, this is obviously not in my book because it just came out, MIT came out with a study that suggests that about half the occupations we have today won't be around in future decades because they're going to be done by technology. So we've been through this before in our country's history. The big changes in agriculture that move farmers to the cities. They went into the manufacturing plants, then manufacturing automated, then they've gone into the service sector. The big question is, are we going to have new jobs we can't even conceive today created? Some economists say, oh, yeah, don't worry. I take a little different view. I say I think we do need to worry, and I think we need to worry for two reasons. One, I think there will be people who will be midterm put out of work, and they need to be retrained. So this is implications for our educational system.
Michael Walden, a professor of agriculture and regional economics at North Carolina State, the author of North Carolina Beyond the Connected Age, The Tar Heel State in 2050. Thank you so much for being on
the
program.
Thank you, Frank. I appreciate it.
We've got links to his book at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, the music of Pat and Mother Blues Cohen. Stay tuned.